gambling on racing board. That's the agenda. I think just for the record, it's important that when we deal with the details of the candidates or the names that Provincial Treasury will submit, that we do understand it is still sensitive information, personal information. But the meeting for now is an open meeting. And if necessary, we will have to make a judgment call. But for now, it's an open meeting. Apologies from Minister Meyer. I'm not sure if there's any apologies from Provincial Treasury, Member Beerwinkel, just for the record. Thank you and welcome, Member Mitchell for standing. Mr. Malila, Dr. Niala, and Ms. Wharton, special welcome to you. And just the gentleman, Mr. Samuel, welcome to the meeting. Members, I think we have in the past decided that this committee wants to have, I think, more say in the process, which Provincial Treasury agreed. But given the time frame and the last term that we are in, we are pressurized to deal with legislation. So we have in the other committees cut out a lot of normal meetings and oversight visits, and we priority is dealing with legislation. And then, of course, meetings like this where we have to deal with interviews and quarterly reports, and there's a few things that committees must deal with. So this morning we are again faced with the committees faced with the time frame as well, and I think we will discuss the way forward. We will deal with the matter, but we will also discuss the way forward and how we can how the department can assist us to deal with our program. And looking at another option, which we will discuss later on. But I think Mr. Malila is ready to brief us on as per the agenda. And I think we, unless members, we want to discuss first before they start, how do we want to proceed with our process in terms of our challenges that we face. Member
Ace. Okay. Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Chairperson, we've been through this process a couple of times already, if you can recall, and also refining almost the process and explaining exactly what we need to do. And we've also been part of the interviews already, so it's not new to this committee. Keeping that in mind, I would propose that we might help with a process at least to understand who's on the long list and maybe a recommendation around the short list, but that we don't proceed with the interviews itself. Leave that to the new committee in the new after the election. I think it's important as well, then they all also will get a feel of, yes, there's a board, and we engage immediately in terms of interviews and how to appoint a new board, and I think that's quite important as well. And also start taking ownership of that part of the process. So I would propose that we just get a short input, and then after we've gone through that long shortlist process briefly, that we also recommend to the minister that there's an extension of time, and I'm sure we will get the detail from the presenters around that to see whose position must be filled and what extension can be given. And what will give ample time, at least for the process to kick in. It could be 6 months, but it could also be a year. I'm sure that might fit into the legislative framework. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member H. Members, are you in agreement? Is there anything else you want to add? Thank you.
Yes, Chair, but I just want to check on the legislative portion of it. I know that legislation that doesn't get processed now falls away and you have to start afresh in the new term. I just want to understand, is this process, when the new term starts, will this process have to start from the beginning, or will it continue with the appointment of the vacancies? If you can just get that clarity on that. But I'm 100% in agreement with Member Ace. I think let's get the new parliamentary standing committee the opportunity to take this process forward, and let them see what's needed. But I just want to make sure that the legislative part is dealt with in terms of the new parliament, the sixth parliament. Because I know with legislation, you have to start from the beginning. You can't just hand over legislation. If this process also needs to start from the beginning, or do you hope this, or this can continue with the new parliament?
But I think my understanding would be that this committee's responsibility here today is to approve a shortlist, which the department is dealing with, not us. You know, we approve just the shortlist. Then they will allow the vetting and all the other things to take place. So when the new committee meets, they can still have this meeting to hear with the department, to hear the background of that shortlist, and then determine the meeting for the interview. So they actually can start, in a sense, fresh within the rules that, that parliaments provide. But I'm handing over just to the department to respond to that.
From our side, good morning to all the members, those ones that I have said good morning to. I think I'm on the same page with you. We're not going to restart the process in terms of adverts, etc., because the process runs continuously. Even if this committee agrees on the shortlist, what we will do is, if a new committee takes it over, is actually to take them through the process that we've gone about, because it's effectively just a change from one committee to another committee. Then, as you said now, if the proposal is that they deal with the entire interview process and get to know how this thing actually happens, then you must then just make an appropriate recommendation to the minister, which I think we should also maybe just provide some guidance in terms of the law, because we're guided by the provision of the legislation as well as the minister. So, Chair, if you're okay, I can on a high level go through, because I think the first part of the presentation deals with the process. You are familiar with it.
Now, thank you for input. Before we go, members, are we satisfied?
Yeah.
We're going to continue as member is proposed, and we're all in support.
Okay.
So I'm handing over to the department. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the first part of the presentation deals with the process, and I'm not going to go through this process. You are aware of the process. So Section 5 just deals with the disqualification. Section 3 deals with the nomination of candidates, and all of this we've already done, from the department side. And then Section 4 of the regulations deals with the procedure for appointment, and we will take the new committee through this. There is a lengthy procedure, and in fact, I think your insistence previously that you play a much stronger role is actually what is emphasized within the regulations, so we'll take the new committee to it. So the role is really to appoint suitable candidates to the gambling board. That's what we've done in terms of the current process. I think what's important to note is that there's been an extensive advertisement process. We've also advertised it through the jobs portal. We received 272 eligible nominations. Obviously, there were a couple of them that were not 25 as yet, so those ones are not eligible in terms of the law. We sent them the forms, and there were 48 forms that were accepted. So I think this is by far probably the biggest load of applications that we've received. We've advertised it, and we haven't received any comments from the public in relation to the suitability of the candidates. There's also been an issue around the ordinarily resident chair. You may recall the discussion that we had previously. There's about 5 questions that we've sent to the candidates. I think there's about 3 or 4 candidates that had to respond to the issue of ordinarily residents, whether they consider themselves. So we leave it up to them to actually demonstrate whether they consider themselves ordinarily resident, and then obviously for the committee to provide guidance on that. But it is a very vague interpretation. And what we've done also in the past, we've rather sort of included people that were giving us information around why they consider themselves to be ordinarily resident, and then it was up to the committee to actually question that. Chair, that's the current board members, there's 6 of them, and you can see that some of the appointments run until March this year. But given your earlier proposal that you intend making to the minister, it means that there's about 4 of them that minister will have to request cabinet's approval to actually extend it. And that would also be in terms of the law. Obviously, there's an issue around the qualifications that's required, and as you can see, the focus is on finance, accounting, also having community experience, legal, etc. And the current board members whose term comes in office, we'll see a reduction in finance, governance, legal and board experience generally. We have applied a shortlisting criteria, Chair, and I'm going to go through it quite quickly. I've spoken about the issue around the declarations that's been made, particularly around ordinarily resident, and also the issue around the potential indirect connection. And I think the committee should question the candidates around particularly their own declaration about potential indirect connection, and also the resident, because this doesn't necessarily exclude them from being applicants. So we leave it up to the committee to evaluate it, and then also to question those members when they come for interviews. And we have considered, as I've indicated, four options. And in fact, we were guided by the legislation, so we've considered qualification, job experience, board experience, governance experience, and then as a start, because obviously the legislation talks about you must have appropriate skills and knowledge. And then secondly, we've also considered the issue around gender representation, because that's what the board or the Act requires. And then there's also a proposal to pull in the whole issue around disability. We have received an application from the CEO from Disability South Africa, and I mean, we believe that it's in the right signal, particularly to the industry, that we have actually considered on that. So option one, Chair, those are the people that we've identified out of the list. There's about 13 of them. Option two leaves us with about 9 candidates, and in fact, what option two does, we've excluded the issue around females in particular, or rather around the designation, whether they are black, colored, white, and you can see that there's only about 9 candidates that actually gets through that process. Instead of getting double points for being female and black, you're only now getting 1 point for being female. But what it does, it reduces the number of female applicants that can be considered for shortlisting. Option three is also, we've got option three where we've considered qualification, job experience, board experience, and also governance experience. That also gives us 4 less females than option one. And again, we've actually excluded the issue around giving preference to females, and also giving preference to disability. So we've actually looked at all the options. Then, Chair, option four, we firstly considered qualification, job experience, and also board and governance experience. Then we brought in the issue around female gender as well as people with disabilities, and that then leaves us with a list of 30 people, and I mean, we believe that this is fairly representative. The accounting officer of the Treasury, given the legislative requirements, have also agreed to this. We have consulted also our own legal services around including the issue around females, disability and stuff. And they indicated that this is not a normal recruitment process, and therefore the principles of the Employment Equity Act per se do not necessarily apply. But there is a principle in the legislation that talks about that on the appointment you need to be gender sensitive. So that's why we brought it to the committee's attention to say that in our shortlisting criteria, we firstly considered whether the person is appropriately qualified, and then secondly, obviously to advance certain issues. And particularly in the gambling board, we brought in the issue around particularly female representation as well as gender. So, Chair, the proposal is we recommend option four. It's 13 candidates. There's also a provision in the law that says you need to have about 3 candidates per vacancy. We'll request you to agree to shortlist. It's fairly representative, both in terms of female as well as population grouping, and that you also make an appropriate recommendation to the responsible member to consider for consideration by the Executive Council. And then also, the key point is that the appointments will only be made subject to positive outcome of the probity investigations. In fact, we haven't done the probity investigations as yet, and once we have approval from yourself on the shortlist, then obviously we'll send it for probity, because we can't send 42 people for probity investigation. I mean, it costs a lot of money, and that is really, in our view, be a bit of fruitless expenditure. So, Chair, that is where we are on this. So we're recommending slide 14 as the proposed shortlist for recommendation to the Minister and also for probity investigation. And then obviously further, if the committee agree, as you suggested, that the new committee deals with the interview process, given also that it's part of maybe training for them, and that maybe the Minister make a submission to Cabinet to consider extending the current term of office for those current members whose terms expire for a period of not more than 1 year. So the Minister may opt for 6 months or may opt for a little bit more, but we would probably suggest for a period not extending one year, and also taking into account the legislative requirements, because obviously the legislation determines the period of appointment. So that's it from our side, Chair. The committee agrees to that. We can deal with it accordingly, and I mean, once we receive your letter, we will then prepare the necessary documentation for the minister. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Malala. Members, I just want one clarity, question for clarity. Option 1 and option 4, is it about the same? Because the options you said 13 persons, and then option 4 you sort of explain more like 14. Is it the same, or what is the difference?
Yeah, it's more on the population group. It's more or less the same, but you see option 1 is actually only 12 candidates, so it doesn't give preference to people with disabilities. Option 4 gives specific recognition to gender as well as people with disabilities. But Chair, I think what's important is we first consider the first option, meaning that you need to be qualified in terms of the law, have appropriate expertise, and then we say that we look at the board and what is it that we want to achieve. We need to look
at things a bit wider, and that's why we've included those things. And we've also considered the issue in the legislation, which talks about minimum of three candidates per vacancy. So if there's four vacancies, it takes us to 12. So in fact, the other options would actually not be aligned to the legislation. That's why we thought option 4 is probably more appropriate.
Thank you, Member Mitchell and Member.
Thank you, Chair. let me first welcome the presentation and also the effort that's gone into this. I think I want to propose that we do in fact support option 4. That's a formal proposal.
Thank you. Member Ace?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, looking at option 4 and option 1, option 1 is including, although we heard that the disability in gender is not considered, it's both in option 1 and in option 4. What's not in option 4 is the population group, and that is, I think, important that we add that. Therefore, option 1. I would also say, why is board experience carrying such a high weight? Because some people are very good, and we sometimes do need new people to come in. And now we almost like keeping the same people in the pool and in the loop, and that's not bringing new ideas, fresh ideas and things like that all the time into the process. I would say 2 is too high. Everything, all is 1, and for board experience I also will give 1. So a person without any board experience will get 0, but at least 1 with experience will get 1. But I mean, the others won't in a big way, being a disadvantage in this whole process, because here we look at qualifications and whether they can do that or not. The population group is important. I think that's why option 1 is, and even if it's less names, that's fine. I think there's a good spread there. I will still, not the word compromise is not the word, but if you all feel very strong that being in the board and experience must be 2, then we can live with that, but I think that's too high. But at least I would say that we consider option 1 as the route to go. So option 1 plus 1 point only for board experience would be my proposal, Chair.
May I just ask, we have 2 different options now, 14 and option 1 from the committee, sir. What's your clarity, sir?
Sorry, just to clarify quickly, option 1 on slide number 11, the disability lump on the right leg, what does it mean?
Chair, I mean, that is what the person disclosed. I mean, we don't know what exactly it means, but the person disclosed that he's got that disability, and this person is also, earlier on, the CEO of Disability South Africa. So I'm sure if the person made that disclosure, it would be from an informed perspective. Chair, just in relation to option 1 and option 4, in fact, it's the same names. In terms of the candidates, the major difference, and I think Member Ace have actually indicated it, in option 4, we exclude race as a pre requirement, because we said we're looking at your qualifications and experience to get over the first hurdle, and that is the very same reason why we've given a much higher scoring to having prior board experience. And I mean, I agree with the risk of it's I don't want to say you close it up, but there's limited opportunity for people that have never served on boards to actually have an opportunity to come in. But in terms of the names, and I can just check, it's exactly the same names, because the one option gives the cutoff is people scoring 4 as a minimum, and then obviously option 4 is effectively saying that if you score 3, then that is a minimum threshold. Otherwise, we're going to just sit with too many names.
May I just ask, you finished? Follow up?
Yeah, when we talk about the cutoff being 4, that means if you, just as an example, have no board experience, you have got job experience, qualifications, let's say population group, and gender, or either or, with no gender or different populations, or some sort of no qualification, and it's unlikely that you make the cut, and the pool becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. So why are we set cutoff at 4? If we know we're going to get the pool, it's going to become smaller. Because if you just look through some of the CVs, if you look at some of the people, age groups, for example, I mean, Terence Arons is 68, Claude Basaudi 60, people with board experience, which is 2 years, then you're cutting the pool very narrow to, just on the face, I didn't go into everybody's name now, but you're cutting the pool with a 13, possibly to 9, 8, if one were to go in depth into this. So is there a particular reason why we chose 4? And can one consider 3, or as Member Ace said, reduce the experience from the board experience from 2 to 1, just to allow a broader pool so you can have more people to start looking at, so you should have a small pond to start fishing in?
For Treasury's pond, I would like to bring in the other angle of other recognition for other structures that people serve on if it's not called a board. For example, you can be an NGO on a big committee that probably not do exactly the same, but has a big responsibility, but they're not called a board. But they in their CV obviously will tell what structure are they. Would it be assessed to give any consideration when we look at that scoring? Just want to add that before.
Chair, we've definitely considered that, and that's why you would see it's board experience / other. And other would be typical governance kind of oversight experience, so we have considered that. And then also, we've also looked in depth about what is the person's kind of job experience. So if one put the two together, you can maximum get 7 points in terms of, if one just take as an example, option 1, you get a point for disability, point for gender, point for population group, 1 for qualification, 1 for job experience, and 2 for board experience. And that is out of a maximum of 7. But the shortlisting criteria is very heavily twisted toward people having board experience and also governance oversight experience and prior job experience as well as qualification, given the requirements of the legislation. So we've looked at the law, and that is the requirement that the law says. The law says if you then trump that, if you get over that hurdle, then you need to consider gender, disability, and all other factors. So that is what we've tried, and we've also looked at the current composition of the board. So we've made the proposal around option 4 because that is much stronger aligned to what the legislation requires, with a little bit of a lower threshold, but it still delivers the same amount of people. It's 13 candidates, and it also there is a mixture of people that doesn't necessarily have prior experience. I mean, so if you look at a person called Kylie Croy as an example, if you look at another person called Lavona Daniel, this is the names, and also Robert Hashi, they don't necessarily have prior board experience, but obviously they get credit for being disabled as well as being from a particular gender. So we believe it's a good mixture.
Yeah, but just on your point, Member Ace, because we have now option 4 and option 1. But if I hear the department correctly that there is consideration for other structures that people serve on, which would then have to lift them to that scoring of two. But I mean, I know you said it should be one or two, but do you want to stay with your proposal? And because we don't want to vote, trying to get consensus here between Member Mitchell's proposal and yours before we finalise.
Chairperson, thank you. You will recall that towards the end I said I can still live with the two for qualifications, and that was now explained as well. I would prefer one, but I can live with two. But I would really strongly ask that we put population group in. That is the one out of seven. One out of seven is 14%. So population group is not overarching, really pushing it, but I think it's an important component from this side. So it's not like we say it must be 50-50 or something like that. It's one out of seven, but I believe that that will help. And if we can agree on that one, I will definitely agree on the two then, if the two is a strong point from your side.
Thank you, Member Ace, but I think what it basically brings us there, that same pool of names is still there.
Yeah.
It's just we will interpret it, the new committee must deal with that when they look at the final scoring and going forward in appointment through the process. So I'm sure Treasury will also have that. Okay. Member Mitchell, satisfied? It's the same pool of names. It's just that other criteria will be added when the new committee deal. But I think Member Ricardo's point was for me more critical, that if you have a set criteria, you're not then automatically reduce it by having coming out with 7, 8 names to choose from out for 4 vacancies because of the criteria. That you just this clarity on that. Are you satisfied with the response?
I'm satisfied, but I just wanted to bring back to the point. If who then determine, or how would the committee, because if I serve on a ward committee, let's say, for example, a ward committee in Woodlands, which is quite a big ward with 8,000 registered voters, and I look after safety, security, and if I serve on a ward committee in Tafelberg, which is the same kind of amount of voters, but there's 10 gang shootings a week, where Woodlands got one a week, I have more responsibility because we have a meeting every night, we have meeting weekends, we do door-to-door with the police every weekend. Who then makes that decision to say that my experience on oversight and governance in Ward 99 is better than your experience in Ward 75, because you don't have as much social issues that we have? And how do we factor that in with somebody who serves on a governance board of a big school in Kemps Bay, who only needs once every 3 months or 6 months because they don't have the same issues that the people in? So that's just my determinant, and that's just the reason I would agree to Member Ace's perspective. Let's reduce 2 to 1, because then you don't have people sitting in a room saying, well, 2 aboard because that's a listed entity, and 1 because that's a non-listed entity. And as soon as you serve in some sort of governance structure, everybody gets the 1. And based on that experience, your qualifications, and job experience, then you can weigh up, and we have as a committee, you can weigh up as to who the proper candidate is.
So if it's reduced to 1, it keeps more people in the pool for an opportunity. That's basically, and that, having said that, it means that still when we look at the criteria, the minimum criteria, everyone is in that pool who meets the minimum criteria as spelled out by the HOD in terms of this pool. So that is already there. It's just now scoring in terms of going forward. Provincial Treasury, just your response on that request, on that sort of agreement with Member Ace, if you reduce it to 1 in that scoring, what impact will that
have? In fact, I mean, I've quickly, I don't think it will have any impact, because you've either got 2 or you've got 0. So effectively, if we reduce it to 1, then it means that we need to reduce the threshold to get a minimum of 12 people, because in terms of the law, you need to have 3. So it means that you're going to have with the same amount of people. But I'm sure we can take, you know, some of the comments into account when we actually deal with the next process. As I said, I mean, this was no easy process to go through. Obviously, you know, scoring the people, I mean, we work through the CVs, and I mean, we do it in the same way that we go through a normal kind of appointment process, and we believe this is the best lot of people
out of the total applications of, I think, 160 odd that I've said earlier.
Member A? Sorry, Member M.
Thank you, Chair. I will live with whatever the committee in would accept. I just want to stipulate, not that I believe that you need to have a diverse pool of people. My concern, however, is that if there's a scoring for population, and let me use persons with disability for argument's sake, and that person would get one according to the scoring matrix, but that person would, if that person happened to be a white male, would get zero. So wouldn't that scoring cancel the one out of the other, and then that person would be discriminated against? And I'm not, I don't know if I'm being scientifically technical about this, but I just,
No. Member H didn't refer to scoring on population. Member H referred to if you don't have board experience, it should not be zero against two if you have board experience, to keep more people into the...
Yep.
Into.
But
he raised population, and when he says population, I'm thinking of diversity. So we all have maybe a different interpretation of what population...
But according to option one, the outcome of option one is population group, you get scored. You get, for disability, you get scored. For gender, you get scored. So even if, so for argument's sake, if a person is disabled that happens to be a male and happens to be white, that person would get 100.
But Treasury clearly said disability is important, but remember, if you're not competent, if it doesn't meet that first criteria, then disability doesn't count. So we all have to overcome the competency level first, the minimum criteria, and at the end you still have your population diversity, disability, gender, everything comes in at the end as well to make up the group that have to be recommended.
Sorry, Chen, I don't want to get into a debate, a dialogue with this, but I get that. However, the total score, and my point is that the total score for a person with disability could potentially be a point lower, and then would not be, because it's equal status on the different scoring according to the matrix, and that's my concern. But I mean, I'm not objecting to it. I want to raise the point.
Did you comment? Any clarity further, or satisfied?
In fact, it's actually the other way around. I mean, when we look at everyone, we look at you, and you get the same score. So if you white male, whether you are disabled or not, you get either a point or you don't get a point. Then we give you an additional point, preference point, for if you are disabled. So if a person is a white male and the person is disabled, the person will get one for disability, and for gender, the person will get a zero, because I mean it's not female. And then population group, if you fall within the, let's call it the designated population we look for, you would either get one or zero. So that is how we've scored it. So it's actually giving preference, option one, to people that are disabled within the broader pool.
I don't want to venture into what the new committee can further deliberate on. I think what we agreed is to get the shortlist, and I think Treasury has given us the name of the shortlist. And I think this, the technicality between option one and four, is why I've asked it up front, the difference is what we need to determine on this. Member Ace, you want to comment?
Yes. Again, if we can look at option one, I think it's important that we don't say the outcome is the same. We must determine what's the criteria. If the outcome is the same, well, be it the same, but I mean, that's not... We don't look at the end, we look at meaning, the means to get to the end. So I would say population group is not overwhelming in percentage, if I can say that. It's 14%, but I think it's an important 14% that must be added to the board experience and other qualifications or experience is now 28%, and that's quite heavy. Could be argued, and that's why I said let's compromise on that one, that this is not a normal group of people serving on a just a community board where this is a very specific experience that you want, and maybe you can understand why it's been loaded a bit more in terms of percentages. So I would really ask that we agree to option one, Chairperson.
Thank you, members. Any consensus on that, the two members, option one? For me, all the names is in, so the new committee will have to deal with that. We agreed on all the names, so are we going for option one? I'm comfortable with option one. Okay. Thank you very much. Proposed by Member Ace, Member Ricardo supported, we all, two members support that. So, Premier Treasury, that is the responsibility going forward, and we will, of course, do our resolutions and then recommend to the Minister for not more than 1 year, 6 months to a year. We will do that. Fine. Thank you very much for coming and for your staff. Appreciate your input.
Chair, also from our side, this will be the last committee for this year. Thank you very much, I think, for engaging us, you know, in this process, and I think we all sharpen our pencils in this process. And also thanks, I think, for...
We're still seeing the budget.
Yeah.
No, it's your question.
For the sake of this agenda, for you and your team, thank you very much for your contribution and supporting, helping, educating us, building our capacity through this term. I'm much wiser now. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Want to do some comments or resolutions on this. I think according to the record, the presentation, I think we will just take it directly from what Mr. Malila said in terms of the criteria and how they work. We will just stipulate that, all the different criteria, and that he alluded to the fact that he three candidates per vacancy, so it seems to me that's why we have that pool, and the recommendation to the Minister that we're going to make that he extend the current board member's term to allow the process to continue in the new term. They will have responsibility to do the vetting from now until the new committee takes over that responsibility. Is that fine? Any other comments, members? Then just on the minutes, we have the meeting of the 5th of February, the minutes. That was the meeting we had with regard to the Western Cape Gambling National Amendment, the amendment on that Act, Gambling Amendment Act, and we do have the concerns that we've raised. And out of the resolutions, there's actually a continuation of that concerns that we put into the resolutions. And then there's a few dates that we need to deal with. Public hearing, 22nd February. Remember, it's unfortunate we were struggling to find a full day as we asked, but we then allowed at least, I think it's about 6 hours, you know, which is almost like a day's work in our time to allow for that. It's not 8 to 5 in the evening, but it's still reasonable amount of hours in the day, and then asking for stakeholders to give presentations or submissions up to 12 o'clock Monday the 4th, and then the negotiating mandate 8th of March, and the final mandate on the 19th of March. That is, and the invitations, you have received copies, that is actually in the process. Any comments, members?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page 2, under briefing by the Department of Trade and Industry, second sentence there, he indicated that the bill aims to specifically deal with the transition from provincial gambling boards. Chairperson, that's not correct. It is from, remember the board collapsed actually, or the board was non-functional, the national board. So they put the board under administration, and what they want to put in place now is this national regulator, but not with a board, with a CEO, if you can recall that. So we will have to just fine-tune that one. I think it's very well reflected in the slide on page 9, so just to help a bit on that one, where there's a clear indication to provide for the establishment of a national gambling regulator led by a CEO as accounting officer. So I think if we put that sentence in there, it will really help. Then chairperson, under the committee, then there was a second point to this as well, a briefing by the department. They also briefed us, and I think we must mention it because later on in the action we refer to that. Remember, they briefed us on the National Gambling Policy Council, where they said if the council will meet for the first time and there's not a quorum, the second time that they meet and there's not a quorum, they can actually take decisions. And they briefed us on that one. And then flowing from the briefing, of course, then there's certain actions and certain decisions that we take there. So I would say there must just be a second paragraph under paragraph 2. The first one around the regulator, and the second one around the National Gambling Policy Council, that one. Then, Chairperson, the committee raised the following concerns on the amendments to the amendment. I don't know if it's correct to say that, but the committee raised the following concerns on the amendments to the bill. Remember, not to the bill, to the act, because the amendments is the amendment bill, and the amendment bill is amending the act itself, if you're with me. And the duplication of functions pertaining to regulators. I think we must be a bit more specific. Honourable Mackenzie, I think he referred to that as well. What will the costing be, and what will the provincial regulator do and the national regulator? So if we can just be a bit more specific in terms of that one. I think there was also a concern that was raised around the cost that the setup of this will be, because that one is referring to the concerns that was raised. And then, of course, we get to the action. I just want to understand under 312, agency rationalization report. Maybe I missed something there on that one. And number 313, costing and breakdown of the budget pertaining to the finalization of the National Gambling Amendment Bill. Now, as I can recall the discussion, it was not around the costing and breakdown of the budgeting pertaining to the finalization of the bill. Was it not more those actions flowing if the bill does get implemented? Because we didn't know how much it's going to cost, and they're going to set up this national regulator that's going to almost duplicate or have a parallel structure. We don't know where the cost or the money is going to come from. I even said they most probably is going to top slice it, you know, from the industry. So let's just put that one a bit clearer, Chairperson.
Remember, it's on that. I think that the issue was that we also said when you have a bill, there's a costing at the end of the bill, and we didn't see that. But you correct us. That new structure, what will it cost?
Not the costing of amending the bill, the costing of the implementation of a new amendment bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the issues that was, and then just on the third page, Chairperson, number 4 there, where we approved the minutes, it's just 2018, that one.
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you. Yeah, that, we will note that comment, member is. I think you're correct. Particularly the costing, member McKenzie have debated at length, and the cost of the new structure. And that provincial is right, it should not be provincial, it's a national capital.
Thank you, Chair.
Just want to
keep on mind, they did say that they have done the agency rationalization report, which he was going to ask his principal first if they can give us a copy of that report.
Members, with the amendments, can we accept?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And just to confirm, the costing was more of the costing of this bill on implementation. Are they going to, let's say for example, they're currently spending 20 million a year. Mm. Are they going to end up spending 40 million a year once the bill has been implicated?
Yeah. Thank you, members, for that. That then is the minutes. We will amend and distribute.
And then, Chairperson, just for on 3.3.1, just for the avoidance of doubt, there is going to be transport and the publication of the notice to invite people to this hearing. Yeah.
Yes, I think we do at the moment work with stakeholders, and we want to make an effort at that. Stakeholders there. There's one up front indicated the company that they want to come. And then we will hopefully the others will respond to the added, but we will look at the database that we engage with, who always engage with us to inform them and to make sure, besides the papers that they do know about it.
Thank you, Chair. I think what Member McKenzie is asking is that the don't have the process or the rules, but that the committee must resolve that in the event that a stakeholder organization requests transport to the public hearing, that it will be funded from the committee budget, and that needs to be as a resolution taken. I think that's what you refer to, what we were advised previously.
Yeah,
based
I think
on a committee resolution.
Yeah, I think there's probably a rule of in there, but I think we're dealing here with a specific, specialized, professional stakeholders who are actually by the means, to put it that way as well. But should their request come, we will support that. Yeah. For the record, we will do that. Thank you. Members, thank you very much. That concludes our business for today. And also thank you very much for your participation and support as well. Thank you very much. My thanks to the admin staff and to the translators and the back office staff. Thank you very much for your support and participation, contributions.